I'll give a little bit of my love to you. There's so much that we need to share, so send a smile and show you care.
From somewhere out there, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Well, last hour I said that oil is denser than water. No, no, what I meant to say is oil is more compressed than water. So when they take the oil out and you put the water in, it's really not replacing what is more compressed. And I think that's what's causing some of the problems. Couple breaking stories before we go to our guest, Dr. Bruce Lipton. First of all, North Korea right now is admitting publicly for the very first time that it has nuclear weapons. And it says it will not return to the six-nation talks aimed at getting it to abandon its nuclear ambitions. They simply say we're out of this for now. But they are admitting that they have nuclear weapons and that they have them to protect themselves. So let's keep an eye on that situation. It never ends, does it? And how about this one? Federal aviation officials apparently received dozens of warnings before 9/11 that attacks from Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda, including some that mentioned airline hijackings and homicide attacks. This according to the New York Times. In its late Thursday editions, the Times said a previously undisclosed report by the commission that investigated the airliner attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon detailed 52 warnings given to the leaders of the Federal Aviation Administration from April to September 10, 2001, about the radical Islamic terrorist group and its leader. The commission report, written last August, said the warnings came from the FAA's own security branch. The paper said five security warnings mentioned Al-Qaeda's training for hijacking and that two reports concerned homicide operations not connected to aviation. Those two breaking stories at this hour. In a moment, we're going to be talking with our guest, Dr. Bruce Lipton, PhD, the biology of belief. Dr. Bruce Lipton received his PhD at the University of Virginia. That was in 1971, and he served as an associate professor at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine, where his research on cloned human stem cells provided a radically new understanding of the mechanisms controlling life. Bruce resigned his tenured position to pursue independent research integrating quantum physics with cell biology. He returned to academia as a research scientist at Stanford University School of Medicine to test his theories from 1987 to 1992. Bruce's revolutionary studies integrating conventional medicine science, complementary medicine, and spiritual healing have made him an internationally sought-after lecturer. His new book, The Biology of Belief, Unleashing the Power of Consciousness, Matter and Miracles, now available. We'll talk about that throughout the night as well. Bruce, welcome to Coast. How are you?
Oh, wonderful, and thank you for this great opportunity.
Well, my pleasure. You know, right before you got on, I had an opportunity to talk about a person in Brazil, they call him John of God, who is doing some miraculous forms of healing. Gosh, I wish I could get you up to Brazil, Bruce, to take a look at what he's doing. I guess some of this has to do with faith and positive energy, doesn't it?
It all has to do with that. And it's a great turnaround from the conventional point of view that we've been ingrained with, that we are more or less victims of our genes, you know, that everything that in our lives are controlled or the characters we attribute to genes. That's a prevailing perception, which is scientifically incorrect. And a new understanding is manifesting now at the very front end of science that I'm so happy and excited about it, because it really reveals that we're about to undergo a massive change in our culture from a new piece of science.
Indeed we are. Now, how did you begin to change your thought? Because you did change, and that happened over what kind of a period of time?
Well, it took me about 2 or 3 years to figure it all out and start working on it, because I was kind of new to this. I wasn't a spiritual person, never was, and never into the weird stuff, astrology and all that, which now I actually have to turn around and say, okay, I can understand the science of all that, where I didn't before. But I came from this conventional allopathic world where I was teaching medical students the dogma of biology about how genes control life and all that. And as you mentioned, my research was on cloned stem cells. And the wonderful part about this is I've been working on stem cells since 1967. So while it's a kind of a recent buzz topic, I was working almost 40 years ago. And the interesting stuff was, as I was doing my research and observing how these cells were carrying out their lives in my tissue culture, I realized that what I was teaching in medical school didn't really conform to the way that life was controlled. And that, of course, led to some understanding that, first of all, and we can talk about and expand on this, is that DNA, it's a mistake. Our whole understanding about DNA, almost like it's a self-actualizing molecule, that like someday a cancer gene is going to turn on and give you cancer or something like that. That understanding is now very different. In fact, so different that it takes us from being victims of our heredity. The new science will really offer people an understanding how our beliefs and our perceptions control the genes. And then when I started to see this, how it worked myself, I first started to get, oh my goodness, I mean, my whole life changed, because as I hope to expand on that, that whatever controls our physiological bodies is actually an identity that's not even in our physiological bodies. It plays through it via mechanisms on the cell surface. When I started to realize that, I started to realize that, my goodness, my thoughts are like a government to a community of about 50 trillion cells. And why this is important is that you and I look in the mirror, we see ourselves, and you look and you see George right there, I see Bruce, and all our listeners, they can see themselves as these individuals. And that's like, well, that's an interesting take, but the reality is that the living things that make us up are the cells. That we, and when we say that word we, actually represent the collective consciousness, so to speak, of 50 trillion cells. It's the cells that are the live things in our body. So in a sense, if I would reduce you down to the size of the cell so you could fit into that environment, you would see this metropolis of 50 trillion citizens. And
making up the whole, I guess.
They're making up the whole. And what I used to teach in medical school is a very interesting point. Every cell, essentially, is just like you and myself in this regard, that with all the miraculous nature of our human characters and qualities, you know, there's nothing new in function that's not already present in every single cell. So every cell has a digestive system and a respiratory system, excretory, a musculoskeletal system, an endocrine system, a reproductive system, nervous system, and even an immune system built into every cell. And so when you realize that these are actually the sentient little beings, that's why when I was culturing them, I'd take them out of the cells out of patients, put them in a tissue culture. And interestingly enough, when I was working with muscular dystrophy, many times the cells grew better in the tissue culture than they did in the person. And it was a very interesting beginning insight to realize that the character of these cells is related to the environment that it finds itself in. And that we and our thoughts, and this is the interesting part of going back again, when we say that word we and we have thoughts, we're actually communicating to 50 trillion citizens, just like a CNN broadcast.
Sure.
And every cell is observing everything. When we get afraid of things in the world, the cells are afraid, because they're like watching TV and watching the ruination of our civilization, and they're darn afraid. They're in the inside, because if civilization doesn't make it, they don't make it.
I mean, are they in there quivering away?
Absolutely, and there's an important understanding that the research led to, and it says very clearly, is an important point, is that individual cells are either really in a state of growth or they're in a state of protection. It's like an either-or situation. And why this is relevant is if we keep ourselves in a state of protection, it means by its very nature that you're not allowing them to grow. And what that really means is this, is that it's sort of like if we look at cells as citizens in a community. And in the old days when we were afraid like the Russians were going to bomb us, we had this idea of building all these bomb shelters. So look at a cellular community or a human community. So the human community is out there doing their jobs, the factories are working, schools are going, all that kind of stuff like that. And that when an air raid siren goes off, the people leave their jobs, their activities, and they go down into a bomb shelter. Well, there's an important point, is that while they were working, the community was in a state of growth. But the moment they go into the bomb shelter, by its nature, to protect themselves, they must let go of the growth. So nothing is happening when everybody's in the bomb shelter. Well, if it's just an air raid test, and 10 minutes later everybody comes out of the bomb shelter, it's not a big deal.
They come back to work and get things going again,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's just like a long coffee break. But here's the problem, and this is the problem that faces almost all of our citizens today, is this. What happens if you have an air raid signal and everybody goes in the bomb shelter, but you never get an all clear? And that's where all of a sudden you realize, well, you can only stay healthy and survive in that bomb shelter for as long as you have materials put aside to do that. But there's a point where if you're not actually continuing the growth process, you run out of your nutrients and your survival materials, and you die in the bomb shelter in a state of protection. Well, why this is important, the community of cells are actually a fractal image of the community of people. And when we give broadcasts to ourselves from our thoughts, like scary things or things aren't going to work, and like, oh my goodness, trouble is ahead, these are essentially like little air raid warning sirens going off in the system. And when that happens, the cells tend to go into protection, and it's like going into that bomb shelter. And what happens in our world, which is very different today than in the past, is that when we get stressed, it's like becoming chronic stress. In the old days, a saber-toothed tiger would stress you, of course, as you were running away trying to save your life. But the reality is, there's a point. If you made it, you outran that tiger or you got away from it, then you collect yourself and you go back on your job again. Mm-hmm. But in our world, it's like we're being chased by that tiger 24/7, 365. And that's where I said, that's where the problems come, because if we are broadcasting that fear into our bodies, our community, our cells are downloading this, then by their nature, they will compromise growth, which means they will compromise our health.
Well, if I'm hearing you right, it sounds like you're saying that individual cells, these 50-plus million cells,
trillion
cells,
yes,
have brains.
They absolutely have brains. And the best part about it is, the exciting part, why I love this work so much, is you can go pick up any textbook anywhere right now and look up the concept of what is the brain of the cell, and they'll say the nucleus is the brain of the cell. And the reason why they say that is because the nucleus holds all the DNA, and we've essentially created this like church for DNA where we all bow down and pray to the DNA gods. And the interesting thing is that we've made it like the brain of the cell. And I love this part, because simple logic. The years, 50 years or more, says, you know, the Watson Crick story, and our you know, getting this belief ingrained in us that we're controlled by the genes. Here's a piece of logic, and it's a part of an experiment that was over 100 years ago. And the experiment is this, and this is where the logic comes in. If you have an organism and it has a brain, and you take the brain out of that organism and throw it away, the necessary consequence of that action is the organism will die. Without a brain, it's going to die. So that's our given premise. The brain keeps it alive and organizes its behavior. Now we go to the cell, and I say, okay, let's take the nucleus, which has all this DNA, rip it out of the cell, because that's the brain of the cell. And so we do this process, which in the lab is called enucleation, and the most amazing thing happens is the behavior of the cell doesn't change. It goes on with its life just as before. Some cells can go two or more months with no genes in them, and they're not just sitting there. They're doing everything they were doing before. Their lives are an integrated series of behaviors of eating and digesting and excreting and moving around and communicating with other cells and avoiding toxins in the field. In other words, you remove the genes, you throw it out of the cell. The cell still has a life. It's integrated. It has purpose, direction. And then you might say, well, what was the consequence of taking the nucleus out? And I love this part. The consequence is this, is that the nucleus has the patterns, like the blueprints, to make the parts for the cell. And if a cell breaks its parts and can't replace them because the genes are gone,
right,
that cell will die. But did it die because the genes were, you know, like the genes were controlling it and now they're not there and they're not controlling it? And the answer is no. What happens is the nucleus is not the brain of the cell, it's the gonad. It's reproduction. And the only time the cell experiences a problem when you remove the nucleus is when it needs to reproduce its parts or reproduce itself. I love to bring this up in lectures. I mean, is that science is a very male-dominated profession, and since we are always told we think with our gonads, and that's how the nucleus ended up to become the brain of the cell, but in reality, it's just reproduction. That leaves the question, of course, where's the brain of the cell?
Where is it? That's right.
Yeah. And that that was the piece of data that, like, 1985, I'd worked on this for about 20 years, and it was about like 1:59 in the morning, and I started to reconstruct my understanding of the cell membrane, the skin of the cell, because my research had obviously said the brain can't be the genes and nucleus because they, in the enucleated cells, are not even there. So we have to look for something else. And my research led me to the cell membrane, the skin of the cell. And the interesting thing was I sat there, and this was like after 20 years of playing with the concept, I rewrote the definition of the cell membrane in a way that I hadn't done it before. And all of a sudden, it was just like at Las Vegas when you pull the crank on the one-armed bandit. All the cherries lined up in a row at this one instant, and my life was changed between 1:59 in the morning and 2 a.m. in the morning. I went from a non-spiritual person to a fully, spiritually understanding person.
Within moments.
Within that minute. Because I saw how the mechanism worked, and if I'll give the definition, and some of your listeners, a lot of them, I presume, might even understand what this definition is. But I sat there and was writing a biochemical definition of a cell membrane, and here's what I wrote. The cell membrane is a liquid crystal semiconductor with gates and channels. Well, in 1985, I wrote that, and I looked at it for like 1:58 now, and I wrote this down, and I look at it and think, my God, I've read that definition somewhere, but I had no idea where, and it wasn't in biology. And all of a sudden I looked up, and there was my first Macintosh computer and a book from Radio Shack that I bought, a simpleton book, Understanding Your Microprocessor. And there I look on page 3 in the introduction, and it said, a chip is a crystal semiconductor with gates and channels. And for the, you know, like a millisecond or two, I mean, there was a storm of activity in my head. It was like, well, it's so coincidental that it was like, it's not a coincidence.
No,
that in fact,
never is.
The cell membrane, and this has now been demonstrated by technology, the cell membrane is an organic information processing chip. And it picks up information from the environment because on the surface of the cell is essentially a keyboard made out of receptor proteins. Receptors are the things like your eyes and your ears and your nose and your taste buds. These are all things in our skin, if you think about it, that are monitoring the environment and sending in information. Well, the cell has molecular equivalents, nanotechnology equivalents. They have eyes and ears and nose and stuff like that in these proteins. And there's like, maybe thousands of different kinds of protein receptors tuned to different things that the cell is aware of on the outer surface. And so as the cell moves through the environment, the signals or information or content of the environment that it's in is like pressing the keys on the keyboard on the surface, and that then sends in a reflex action into the cell, which can control the genes so that the cell makes an appropriate response to stay alive in the environment.
Preferably, it does that.
It does that, and that's where, you know, when you and I could get into the discussion about, yeah, but that's what the design was, but how come we have so much autoimmune disease today, diseases that we're killing ourselves with?
And why can't they fight back?
And, And the issue is like when you understand the nature of the programming, rather than trying to go into the biology with drugs and chemicals and surgery and radiation, it's like, no, you don't go in to destroy the machine. You actually have to understand how to reprogram the machine.
All right, stay with us on that, Bruce, because what a lot of mainstream medicine has been doing over the years is exactly that, killing off parts of that machine, hoping that it will replace itself. And apparently, as you say, that's not the way to do it. We'll be back in a moment. And you and I, by the way, also had some very uncanny things happen to us as kids in science class. I'm going to share my episodes with you as well. Very similar with yours, Bruce. Back in a moment.
Miss part of the show? Listen online with Streamlink. Log on to coasttocoastam.com. City of Angels, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
What a guest he is tonight, Dr. Bruce Lipton. We'll be back with him in just a moment. Well, we have a finite date now on the end of the Art Bell's interview on Mel's Hole, the free CD offer, the end of Feb. That's it. And then we are resting it. If you want to subscribe to the After Dark newsletter, now's the time to do it because you'll get the free CD and you'll also get the Getting Those Sounds of Hell on the CD as well. Call 1-888-727-5505, 1-888-727-5505. You can also go online right at the bottom of the coasttocoastam.com website, safe and secure at coasttocoastam.com. Bruce, I couldn't help but see the uncanny similarities between your career as a youngster and mine. When I was in school, 5th, 6th, 7th grade, my science teachers would get microscopes, much like you did when you were a kid. And the very first thing I saw with a microscope that just sent me on the path of just wanting to get into science in a broadcasting sense was a little paramecium, just like you did.
How did that get you into broadcasting?
Well, I wanted to investigate these as a reporter and broadcaster. You wanted to do it as a scientist. And so I went in this direction to do these kinds of stories. I'm having the greatest time talking to you because this is what I wanted to do, but on this end. And you're doing what you wanted to do.
Well, you know, it's fun because both of us saw these things as, I guess, as little sentient beings in this world that were there, and they move with such purposeness, you know. They weren't like pinballs bouncing around. And so that you could feel that there was some process of consciousness going on in these beings.
I always thought of them as my little friends.
Yes. Well, that's what they became to me, and my best teachers in the end.
Let's talk about why this works the way it does. You know, you brought up something very interesting a few moments ago when you said, you know, you look in a mirror and deep inside you have these 50 trillion things, cells in us. They're all alive, doing what they do and functioning. But the big question remains, who are we? And when you do look in that mirror, Bruce, you see your two eyes and your nose and your mouth and your ears, and you just try to wonder, you know, what am I doing here? What's the purpose? What do I do? How do I function? Well, I wake up in the morning, I do what I do, I come into work, but what am I? And, you know, it's something I yet can't answer. Have you been able to get that?
Well, I certainly got, for my own sense of being, an answer that has changed my life on this planet. And it comes to this when I was talking about the fact that every cell has this like computer chip membrane, and the DNA is actually the hard disk. That's where the programs are. And I said that what activates the cells are signals from the environment. And this is the beautiful part. When you come down and say, well, look, you know, George, you have cells in your body, and they have your identity to them. I have cells in my body with my identity, and every listener out there has cells which have their own identity. And you say, what do you mean have their own identity? And the answer is this. If I take your cells and put them into another body, they will be looked at by the other body's cells as, you know, who are these cells?
Yeah.
They don't belong to us.
The invader.
And they will, you know, remove them from the system. And so the question is, okay, what is it that makes your cells you and my cells me? And this is where, if you track it down, this is the part, I mean, it just blew me away.
Should I sit down for this?
Yeah, because this is a connection that says it puts like pieces together for everything. And that's this. On the surface of your cells are a set of protein antennas that are unique to you and not to anybody else. Now, on my cells, I have a completely different set, or at least, it doesn't have to be completely different. There could be overlaps. When people try to, when they need a kidney or a transplant, you can't just take anybody's cells. You actually have to, what they say, tissue type them and try to compare the similarities between the surface markers on these cells.
And get as close as you can.
And yeah, because the closer you can, the less of the aggression of the immune system to reject.
Right, right.
So what are we looking at to identify people with? Well, we're looking at a set of antennas. Well, where are they located? Well, they're on the outer surface. Are the antennas unique to each individual? Well, the clusters are unique. And then the question is this. Well, do the antennas give the identity? And this is the part where it's like, no. As their names imply, they're antennas. They're receivers of identity. And so the fact is, there's a signal going through your cells from the environment, picked up by a set of exclusive antennas that are different than the signals going through mine, although we may share signals.
Now, wait a minute.
Yes.
You just said the signals are coming from the environment.
Yes.
Are you saying like the universe?
Yes. And that, so, and here's the, and the part that, that's what I said, you know, that moment where I said in 1985, at 1:59, I was like not spiritual, and two, I was spiritual because at that moment I realized that we're controlled by the environment. Each one of us is controlled as a unique individual by a separate set of signals. And what makes that important at that moment is if you kill the cells, you've never killed the source of the signal. The signal was outside. It never was on the inside.
Is that how, like, my cell phone, for example,
yes,
is got a different number than your cell phone?
Right.
We're all broadcasting our cells and our communications up to that satellite, up to the receiver.
Back and forth.
But and it's all going to the same place, but when it comes down to us, we're all separately receiving it.
It's essentially, almost the most perfect illustration is you take some white light, you shoot it through a prism, it breaks up into the rainbow spectrum, and then I go down and divide each of the color spectrum into the smallest frequency of a unique color, and I assign that to each individual. And what it really says at some point is while we each consider ourselves as a unique entity as much as an individual color, collectively, we're the white light. And the lesson that we actually have to biologically understand on this planet is that rather than conforming to Darwinian theory, which is this destructive philosophy that is actually leading to our own demise, we have to recognize that we are all part of the same living organism called humanity, that to eliminate another person is the same as going in your own body and ripping out cells and throwing them away. And that, of course, the dialogue isn't right among the community, and that's why we express as a community a dis-ease. But, you know, it's interesting because the same image that occurs within individuals, that if the dialogue isn't right in our own personal biological communities, then the community will fracture itself just like people do. And as a result, we express an internal dis-ease.
So here's the question. If we're receivers,
yes,
who's sending to us?
Well, you know, and as I said, I came from a non-spiritual place, and for me to say this, you know, to all three of my listeners out there, the reality is I think that we come from a universal source, that we come from a Godhead, that we are all a piece of this God in the sense of each color frequency in that spectrum is a piece of the white light in total, that we come down to this earth, that we have a unique opportunity. You said, you know, well, what am I doing in this place? Well, here's an interesting concept if we think about it. I'm trying to say that we have this existence outside of the body, but we also have an existence in the body. So why have one or the other? What's the difference? And the answer, it really comes down to this. Without a body, if you're just a spirit, what does chocolate taste like? Or what does a sunset look like? Or what does being in love feel like? The reason why these make sense to us in our physical body is because our cells translate the environment and give us sensation that we can experience. And so, it's like come full circle and say, well, what are we doing here? My God, this if there's a heaven, a place of creation, I think we're here. And the problem is, since heaven is a place of creation, you can create anything you want. And I think the biggest problem is we have leaders who are creating things that are not in our generalized picture of what we think heaven might be. And yet we can turn this all around, and this will be, I think this is the evolution that we're about to go through, and this is a very important step in human civilization because we are evolving to a higher level of awareness, and this new science, the one I told you about, that how cells control life, is part of that pivotal change. It's interesting because you say, well, you mean just a scientific belief is going to change civilization? And the answer is very simple. It says, well, look, go back when we had Newtonian physics, and then all of a sudden one day we had quantum physics. As soon as we had quantum physics, our entire world changed. I mean, we don't use crank phones, we use cell phones.
That's right.
You know, and instead of stethoscopes, we have CAT scans. And the fact was, how did that change? Because science saw how the universe was made up of something different than it thought it was. Well, this is going to happen again. And it actually links the former quantum revolution now to a biological revolution as well, because we're going from a point where we thought that the genes were controlling our lives to the reality that we control our genes.
Now, are there some scientists, though, who still believe in the conventional fashion?
Oh, my God, most of them do.
Still.
Most of, you know, because if you're not doing research at this edge, this is out in the research end, because if you're doing teaching, you have to teach according to the textbooks. And the textbooks are right up to this minute telling you that the genes control life, even though I can, as I told you before, you can remove the genes and life isn't affected. So this is a belief system that we're propagating, and it's totally incorrect in that regard, but the difference is psychologically, socially, culturally, is when we own fully that the life that we're experiencing is something that we are creating. And we own that not as like, oh, isn't that a neat idea, but as a fundamental way of this is how life works, then we have the freedom to let go of the enslavement to the power structure, to the belief that we're victims, our biology is victims to every little drug out there and every chemical and toxin, to realize, my God, you can walk on this planet as much as like walking across hot coals. If your head's right, you can walk across the hot coals. If your head's not right, then don't try that.
You used to do research on cloned human stem cells.
Yes.
Now, over and above the arguments of pro and con based on emotional reasons, in your opinion, did you think that that now was a waste of time and that you should have been concentrating primarily on what you're doing now and this is this new biology?
Well, no, because those stem cell babies, they taught me the new science that I modeled my life after. Once I understood how they worked, I modeled my life after them. And I can't, it's hard for me, I burst with excitement about my way of life before understanding this was, I was successful in my profession, but life was life. Today, as I said, I'm so excited. I really think this place is heaven because I realize now I've made these creative changes, and they're not accidents, that they're actually purposeful kinds of control. And as a result, it's like understanding how cells live. And we look at cells in an academic sense. You say, well, what intelligence can cells have? And the reality is, I'll tell you the intelligence they have. They made us, number one. And number two, they have technologies that we can't even think about. They have technologies that allow 50 trillion cells to live under your skin in a perfect state of harmony and balance. And you can be healthy and ecstatic, and meaning that, God, we're trying to figure out how a few billion people can live together. And here are the rules of life. The cells have been doing it for billions of years. Show how you can have perfect harmony and health in a population. And we look at them as not being intelligent, and I think, well, that's our hubris. And the reality is the secrets that we need to know are already built into the biology. And in the biblical sense, it says, like, go within to get the answers. Yeah, because going within is who we are made out of. We're made out of those cells. And it's, to me, it's just so wonderful to see them work and do this stuff, especially stem cells. You know, right now this whole issue of stem cells and research and all that, to me, I think it's like a joke in some sense, because it's sort of as if you look at it and you stand back and tell you, like, God gave you stem cells, but didn't really give you the way to get them to work, and so we have to wait for the pharmaceutical industry to figure that out. And the reality is, you got stem cells because you have them in your system that you can use them. The question is, rather than trying to find the chemicals to engage them, we should really ask the natural question is, if we already have them, then what might be the problem in our exercising use of them?
Are you saying, though, that all drugs are not worthwhile?
Not all drugs. I would really put down there's basically very few possibly that are okay, but the biggest history in the drug research is that most of it's all placebo effect anyway. And that, yes, indeed, there are some people who actually need some drugs because, I'll tell you why, they got here with birth defects. And they got here, like, it's sort of like cars come off the assembly line at the factory, and every now and then a car comes off. It's not going to work just right, and that's going to need more care and maintenance than the other ones are. But the point is 95% or more of us as a population got here with a perfectly adequate set of genes to have a prosperous, healthy, happy existence and experience on this planet.
If we took care of it.
If we understood how it worked rather than buying the stories that we were told how it worked.
So that also includes, though, what you eat, how you exercise. That's all important to
that. All of this stuff is, it's like if we collectively group it, you say, oh, this new age phenomenon stuff, and it's sort of like, well, yeah, basically to understand that if you step aside from the concept that this is just a physical machine, I mean, we teach it in the academic sense that the body is like this vehicle, but the unfortunate part of our analogy is we never really talk about the driver. And that's the big problem of medicine. We only talk about the vehicle's well or the vehicle's defective, and we never consider, so what's the influence of the driver who's handling that vehicle, which is that spiritual stuff that was coming through those antennas that make you and I different because we're drivers, or, as most people are, unfortunately, in the world we live in, they switched on to autopilot.
Let's take out the creator, the
yes.
higher power for a moment.
Yes.
I don't know how we can in this question, but let's try to.
Yes.
When this all started, and there were tiny little cells on this planet, and
3 billion years worth of just single cells.
And they're all over the place, but I mean, that's what they are. Single cells, little organisms. I mean, if you were to look at them with a microscope, you'd go, that's going to be me one day. You wouldn't believe it. What happened, Bruce, to get this to start forming who we are today? Because, again, taking out the creator for a moment,
yes,
it's very difficult to explain how this came about.
Well, the creator gets hard because that gives us an image of somebody up there with like a magic wand doing kinds of stuff like that. And yet there is, in a sense, if you understand the new biology, it actually unifies the concept of both. And this is interesting. It unifies the concept of both creationism and evolution, that they both occurred at the same time in this regard. That
can this have happened?
Yes,
without
absolutely.
Without the creator.
Without the creator, without the energy that
right.
invisible moving forces?
Right.
No.
That's what I thought.
No. The analogy that's a very pretty picture is, imagine I take iron filings, I put them in like a salt shaker, and I sprinkle iron filings on a piece of paper.
Okay.
Every time you do that, you just get a random pile of iron filings.
Right.
But if I put a magnet underneath that paper and then sprinkle the iron filings, every time I do it, I get this pattern. And if I make a complex pattern of magnets, I get a complex pattern of iron filings. I throw away the iron filings, sprinkle it again, and guess what? It forms the same thing again. So what's the difference is, iron filings are like cells, but there's a field with information, and that's like the magnet. It's an energy field.
And without that field, it's
then
nothing.
Then you just got a pile of random cells, and it doesn't do anything.
And that's the way it would have continued.
Absolutely. And so what's important is conventional biology is scientifically passé, because conventional biology does not yet recognize the influence of quantum mechanics and does not express the role of energy as information in biological systems. And as a result of their completely mechanistic Newtonian perception, they look at the body as this machine, but they forget about the fields and the energy, which are actually the driver of this machine.
Do you think these single-cell organisms, 3.5 billion years ago, knew what their mission was, and that was to create us?
I don't think they had that level of awareness, but at some point their mission was as same as us, even, you know, whether it's a single cell or 50 trillion cells, the mission was always to survive. And it's interesting, we call that a biological imperative. Nobody knows where that's programmed, but every organism from the most primitive single cell upwards, if you threaten its existence, it will do every defensive move to stay alive. And that's like, so why would it do that? We don't know, but if you build that in, then it says every organism on this planet got here with intention to survive.
When we come back, Bruce, at the top of the hour, I want to find out from you why then these organisms formed insects, fish, trees, then us, chipmunks. Let's find out why there was a difference. I'll be back in a moment.
The official website of Coast to Coast AM is www.coasttocoastam.com. Log on now.